He strode through the hallway to the station's entrance and stepped out. Prescott had already made it clear he wasn't about to give up Zoe's location. They would have to crack him and do it fast. Juliet waited by the door.
Did you arrest him?
She asked. She was trembling.
Yeah. He already confessed.
There was a small puddle of vomit a few feet away. Poor kid.
He'll go to prison, right? They won't let him, like, pay bail or something.
No, he's too risky.
And I won't have to testify, right? In court, I mean. He confessed.
Tatum hesitated.
I hope not.
Juliet exhaled and a single tear ran down her cheek. The door opened and Foster walked out looking shaken. Tatum turned to him.
Where is he? The interview room. But he won't say a thing.
Tatum nodded.
I'll go to Prescott's house. Maybe he left something there. A map or a journal or something. Hurry. We don't have much time left.
Foster turned to Juliet.
It's a good thing you identified him, miss. You may have saved Zoe Bentley's life.
Juliet gaped at Foster blankly. Tatum snorted.
I didn't identify anyone, Juliet said. I just did what the agent told me to. I don't remember what happened that night. I already told you. I don't think I even saw his face.
Foster blinked, then turned to Tatum.
A bluff? He was dying to confess, just needed a bit of prodding. But how the hell did you... Later, detective. I'm going to look in that asshole's house. Did you send a patrol car there? They'll meet you there. Okay, and get someone to drive the actress of the year back to her home. You did an amazing job, Juliet. You deserve a goddamn Oscar.
Chapter 88. The interrogation room was stifling hot. Tatum forced himself to shut the door, leaving the cool air of the other room behind him. Prescott was used to working in the morgue, where the temperature was significantly lower than the rest of the building. It was a reasonable bet that the heat made him uncomfortable. Then again, he was also used to digging in the blazing sun. While Tatum had searched the man's apartment, Foster had released Joseph Dodson, who was now obviously in the clear. Then he began interrogating Prescott, grilling him for over an hour. Prescott had asked for no lawyer and had been happy to talk about his previous murders. But when it came to Zoe, he'd stayed silent. Tatum sat down, saying nothing, looking at the man. Prescott seemed at ease, almost bored. It was a mask. Tatum was sure of it. He'd seen the fear in the man's eyes when confronted with Juliet, seen the color drain from Prescott's face. It had taken him a few moments to get his act together, but Tatum had glimpsed the real man behind it, and he needed to find him again and make him crack. Unfortunately, he'd lost the interrogator's most valuable tool. Time. Zoe would be dead in a few hours. He couldn't afford to waste a single moment, but he also couldn't let Prescott see that. He let the silence stretch, counting the seconds in his mind, each one heavy and loud.
There's a password-locked application on your laptop, Tatum finally said. Controlling the video feed from wherever Zoe is.
That's right,
Prescott said. His voice was cool, distant, a note of smugness there as well.
I have a deal for you. Give me the password, and I'll turn on the feed.
Prescott raised his eyebrow.
And in return, I'll let you watch it.
Prescott folded his arms, smiled slightly, saying nothing.
I know you want to. You know nothing about me, agent. This is your last opportunity to glimpse any of your precious videos. There'll be no movie time in prison.
For one moment, the man seemed to hesitate, and Tatum forced his own face to remain expressionless. He needed to know if Zoe was alive more than anything. He estimated that she'd been in the coffin for almost 10 hours, maybe more. Not knowing gnawed at him, emitted a constant white noise of panic in his mind. Prescott shook his head.
No.
Tatum didn't expect any other reaction. This was part of Prescott's mask. It wasn't likely he'd let it drop that easily. Still, Tatum couldn't resist the temptation to ask. Already he regretted giving the man this little victory. He took a notebook from his briefcase, flipped a few pages.
I don't suppose you saw the profile we composed of the digging killer?
Prescott cleared his throat.
No, I didn't. It would be interesting to hear what you think. Aged between 30 and 45. White, has a van, works in a job that emphasizes thoroughness. Not very riveting stuff. There are some things here that match your background quite well. But the part where it gets really interesting is...
The door opened and Foster walked inside carrying a few evidence bags. He placed them on the table. Lyons followed him carrying a portable paper shredder, which she placed by the evidence bags, not glancing at Prescott. Both of them left, closing the door behind them. Prescott scrutinized the evidence bags. Tatum got up, grabbing the power cable for the shredder.
Where was I? Oh, yeah. It gets really interesting when we started estimating what makes you tick.
He plugged the shredder into the wall, then sat back down. He opened one of the evidence bags, took out the laptop that was in it.
You really should have locked the entire thing with a password. It's amazing the kind of things we found here. Maybe I wanted you to find them.
Tatum turned on the laptop, which had been hibernating.
Maybe you did. But people often forget the astounding amount of information their computer collects about them.
He looked at the screen as the computer whirred to life, forcing himself to ignore the sluggish pace of the ancient hardware, doing his best to avoid glancing at the clock on the bottom right corner. Time. It was everywhere.
One of the things that stood out about you is that you are driven by fame.
Prescott snorted in derision.
Right. Hollywood is just around the corner waiting for me.
Tatum raised an eyebrow.
Not Hollywood, maybe. But you have your own Hall of Fame, don't you? Let me read you some of your search queries from your browser.
He opened the history tab on the browser.
Most famous serial killers. Infamous serial killers. Famous serial murderers. Nice trick there, swapping killers for murderers. Let's see what else. Oh, I like this one. Important serial killers. Almost every day you look those things up. Are you imagining your name in those articles and charts? Here's an article you keep returning to. 20 of the most infamous serial killers America has ever seen. Where do you think you measure there? Number 13, 9, 7? I couldn't care less. Well, that's good, because I have news for you. A serial killer who managed to kill only 3 or 4 people doesn't really get to those charts.
Prescott just smirked, shuffling in his chair to make himself more comfortable.
But of course, you don't really care about numbers, do you?
No, I don't.
What do you care about, Prescott?
Prescott folded his arms.
Humanity.
The man inserted a lot of pathos into that one word. Tatum felt like wrapping his fingers around the doctor's neck and squeezing. Instead, he smirked.
Of course. You're a regular humanitarian.
Sometimes you need to kill a few to save many.
Tatum quirked his eyebrow.
Save them from what?
Themselves.
The cool facade dropped off. A fervor filled Prescott's eyes.
No one has time to think anymore, do they? We all used to have time to think. Waiting for the bus to come, standing in line in the supermarket, maybe just sitting in your living room. But what do we do now when that happens?
Tatum said nothing, letting the man preach his sermon.
We whip out our mobile phones, check Twitter or Instagram, or play a game of Candy Crush, because God forbid we actually think for 5 minutes. What do you think this will do to us in the long run? The whole human race, avoiding their own thoughts. And that's what you gave your victims. Time to think.
It was more than that. I gave everyone time to think.
Whenever I stopped the video feed, everyone would start wondering, is she dead? Is she alive? Superposition.
That's right. Superposition.
A question with no answer. I forced their hand. They had to think.
Tatum sighed and let a small, weary smile show.
Yeah. Your mission, right? I know all about it already. Do you know what Zoe wrote down on your profile? She wrote that you are so obsessed with yourself and your so-called mission that she expects to find a meticulous journal about it in your possession.
Tatum opened another evidence bag, taking out a stack of papers.
Look what I found. Not a journal. Even better. A partial draft of your autobiography. There's a preface where you wrote down what you just said. Humanity, time to think, mobile phones, blah, blah, blah. It's tiresome stuff. But you were invested in this thing. These pages are full of your own corrections and editing notes. You were working really hard, getting it just right. I bet you can't wait to write the final 2 or 3 chapters and find a publisher. In fact, I even saw in your browser history that you were researching agents. Methodical planning there.
Tatum picked up the top page.
I hope you remember your own notes. He skimmed it, a bored expression on his face, then turned to the shredder and slid the page in. The shredder buzzed to life, whirring as the page turned into long, thin ribbons. Tatum took another page and shredded it, then the third. He watched each page as it shredded, the ribbons piling on the floor in a growing heap.
"You're destroying evidence," Prescott said.
His voice was cool, but Tatum could feel something else underneath the surface.
"We have evidence up the wazoo, as far as you're concerned."
Tatum shredded the fourth page.
"How many chapters do you think you have left to write?"
He shredded another page.
"Some. This interview would make for a great scene. You know what I think?"
Tatum shredded another page. The sound of the shredding was very satisfying. He hoped Jensen wouldn't barge in, screaming that he was destroying evidence.
"I think you have maybe 3 chapters left. One for Zoe, one for your capture, and one covering the legal proceedings that follow. Maybe an epilogue for your time waiting for your death sentence." "Is that your professional opinion as an editor?" "As an avid reader."
Tatum put the stack of pages down and picked up the last evidence bag, opening it. He slid the book out.
"The Bundy Murders. Found it in your library, along with 4 more like it. You liked to read about Ted Bundy, didn't you? I found him interesting. There are some pages here that are underlined and earmarked repeatedly. Do you know what I'm talking about?"
Prescott said nothing. Tatum let the silence stretch while he shredded a few more pages. Every second Zoe's death inched closer. He wanted Prescott to feel there was a price for the trickling of time as well.
"I'm talking about the pages about Bundy's escapes," Tatum said. "Tell me, Prescott, do you really think you might be able to escape prison?"
"I never considered it."
"Ted Bundy escaped in 1977. We've improved since then, and I'll personally make sure you're placed in the most secure, isolated vault available, watched 24/7. Trust me, there'll be no chapter in your autobiography about how you managed to get away."
It was Tatum's turn to smirk.
"You're wrong about me, Agent. I'm done." "Of course you are."
Tatum raised a page and skimmed it.
"I like this note of yours. This section needs work. It feels trite. I have to say I agree with your assessment. Also, you misspelled the word rhythm here. There should be an H after the R." "Ah, well."
Tatum shredded it, too. Prescott's mask was hanging there well, but Tatum was sure now that there was a tension in the man's posture. He was getting to him. How much further would he need to take it? How much longer?
"There were no other copies of your autobiography as far as we could tell. The forensic team is looking further, but I'm pretty sure there's only one. I found a 500-page package of paper on your desk, and it was about half empty. This draft is, well, was, really 230 pages long. Double space, so there's room for your notes, right?"
Tatum shredded another page.
"Yeah, it's the only copy, aside from the one on the laptop."
Tatum put the pages down, turned to the laptop.
"There it is. The file name, as you remember, is Time to Think."
He clicked it.
"If I were to delete this, would you be able to rewrite it?"
His finger hovered above the delete button. A few seconds passed. Prescott didn't budge, his face blank. Not calm anymore, not at ease, simply contained.
"We'll just have to find out."
Tatum hit the keyboard with 2 fingers.
"Shift-delete. Don't want you to get it from the recycle bin, do I?"
There it was. The first spark of anger, the first twitch of fury in Prescott's lip. Tatum leaned back and shredded pages again. Now, Prescott's eyes were intent on Tatum's hand as he shredded each page in turn, and Tatum knew he was right. Prescott had no other copy of the file.
"Are you already planning to rewrite it?"
Tatum asked.
"Trying to remember your favorite paragraphs for later? Maybe a sentence you were particularly pleased with?" "Do your best, Prescott. But you better remember hard, because I'll make sure you won't get anything to write with. No pens, no pencils, no goddamn crayons. And paper. You won't get a single post-it. When you go to the toilet, you'll have to wipe with your fingers, because you can forget about toilet paper. This autobiography will never see the light of day unless I get what I want. And you know what that is."
Another paper shredder. And another. And another.
"Where is Zoe?"
Prescott clenched his teeth tightly as if forcing himself to be quiet.
I saw on your laptop that you bought a cellular signal booster online on Sunday. Why? Where did you put her that you needed a cellular booster?
No answer. Almost there, just a bit more. Hang in there, Zoe.
You know what? Tatum said brightly. I didn't even tell you the best part of our profile. Zoe figured it out, and seeing your library at home, I realized she was spot on. You had some medical books, a bunch of serial killer biographies, and a book called Buried Alive, which I didn't need to open to guess what it's about.
So what? Prescott asked, sneering.
I do my research. Right. Except you know what was missing? I didn't find one book about Schrodinger, or physics, or quantum mechanics. And I didn't even see a pamphlet about humanity or the process of thought or any sort of philosophy. Almost as if those things didn't really interest you. Isn't that strange?
Prescott didn't answer.
Here, let me read you from Zoe's notes.
He put down the pages left from the draft, picked up the notebook, flipping another page.
The unsub is obsessed with his mission, his goal. He wants to believe this is what drives him, what makes him kill. This is why he created the website, why he streams those videos, why he's constantly naming himself Schrodinger, and why he calls the murders experiments. But it's a lie, he tells himself.
Tatum paused, raised his eyes for a moment to meet Prescott's, then kept reading.
The truth is, the unsub kills those women for one reason. He derives sexual stimulation from the act of burying women alive. He uses his obsession as a facade to avoid the shame in acknowledging that to himself.
Tatum put the notebook back, took a page from the leftover autobiography, shredded it, shredded another one.
She used big words. Zoe's like that, he said. But what she meant was this dude has a kinky taste and likes to get it off while burying women alive. And he's so damn embarrassed by his weird fetish that he invented a whole story just so he doesn't feel like a weirdo loser.
Another page shredded. Prescott's body was trembling.
What I'll do once I finish shredding this piece of shit you call a book here, Tatum said, is call a press conference and tell them we caught the digging killer. And this sad sack of shit used to polish his knob while watching his own videos. And that's why he did all this. That's how people will remember you.
Page shredded.
Unless you tell me where Zoe is. You can keep going,
Prescott said, his voice trembling with rage.
But you won't get anything from me. And your precious Dr. Bentley can rot underground. She was right under your noses and you never even realized it.
Tatum put down the draft, feeling a twitch of excitement.
She was right under our noses.
That's right, Prescott sputtered, flushing.
She's right under your fucking noses. Language, doctor. You didn't say she is under our nose. You said she was under our nose. Did you move her?
Tatum looked at the man intently, thinking hard. He'd bought a cellular signal booster. What had changed? For some reason, Prescott hadn't been able to stretch a cable from the box to the surface. He'd had to boost the signal of the transmission. The puzzle pieces shifted, the truth taking shape.
No. Of course you didn't move her. It was us. We're the ones who moved her. She was under our noses just before.
Tatum lunged from his chair and Prescott tightened, as if worried that he would strike him. But Tatum was already striding toward the door. He knew where Zoe was. Chapter 89. It was hard to tell how long she'd been there. Zoe knew she couldn't trust her own measurement of time. Sleep tried to grab hold of her and she struggled to stay awake. It didn't make sense. She would spend less air if she were sleeping. But she knew that in all probability, once she fell asleep, she would never wake up. She couldn't make herself give up. Not yet. She kept wondering whether there was anything else she could do, any message she could try to pass along. After her initial message of school, she'd switched to Deborah School, which was a nightmare to get right. She'd tried three times, feeling that she managed to garble it completely each time, blinking too much, pausing in the wrong moments, fumbling a letter. Her focus and concentration were shot to hell. Finally, she'd given up and just lay there, thoughts flickering in and out in her mind like a swarm of fireflies, out of sync with each other. She was dizzy and her head pounded. Was it exhaustion? thirst, or the low amount of oxygen in the air. For the millionth time, she wondered if she'd screwed herself by trying to communicate with people outside. After all, they'd been searching for her, and then she'd given them a single word, school. It must have been easy to assume that she meant she was buried in a school. Had she pulled them away from a promising lead, sending them on a fool's errand? She wanted to believe that Tatum, at least, would know the killer would never risk burying her somewhere so public, with so many possible witnesses. Fading away, she began hallucinating again, hearing voices. Andrea, her parents, old colleagues and friends. It was reassuring that her mind had finally stopped obsessing about serial murders and psychopaths, letting her relax, surrounded by people who cared about her. A sudden thunk made her eyes open wide to no perceivable effect. It was still dark. But she heard sounds. Real sounds. The muffled voices of people, the scraping and thumping. After so long in a dark silence, it was an overwhelming sensation to hear something aside from her own breathing and sounds. She tried to let out a scream for help, couldn't. A creaking sound was followed by sudden sunlight. She instantly shut her eyes, and even through her eyelids, the light shot a sharp pain through her skull. Someone was by her side, pulling the gag from her mouth. She moved her tongue around, the sudden freedom of it feeling sublime. She wanted water but couldn't ask for it, couldn't talk. A voice murmured by her ear, soft, tense, full of worry. Tatum. His arms helped her up, pulling her close. She let go then, her feet buckling, and he had to grab her to keep her upright. Someone cut the binding on her wrists. People were shouting around her, hurried instructions for a medic. A bottle to her lips, a slight sip of water. She let it roll in her mouth, almost crying at the sensation. An arm around her shoulders, a strong hand, and Tatum's voice.
You're all right. We got you here.
She shifted, pulling herself away from the hand sharply. She didn't want anyone to touch her. It was too close, too limiting, like the box. She wanted nothing to contain her body. Forcing one eye open to a slit, she expected a familiar scenery from the previous crime scenes. Desert soil, pebbles, rocks, and cacti around her. But that wasn't what she saw. The ground was green for some reason, and there were trees around her and large white shapes. Rocks. She opened the other eye, holding a hand to shade her face, feeling Tatum's silent presence by her side. A cemetery.
Where?
She croaked.
Fairmount Cemetery, Tatum said. We're in San Angelo.
A cemetery. She'd been buried alive in a cemetery. Her brain was already churning up ideas, but they were disjointed, broken. She turned around, stared at the large pit they'd pulled her out of and the coffin at the bottom. A coffin, not a box.
This is a grave.
It's Nicole Medina's grave, Tatum told her. He switched you with her body just before the funeral.
She looked down at the pit. The coffin lay inside and something metallic flashed in it. The infrared camera. Her breath shuddered. Just before the funeral. Who was it? The priest? The funeral director? She hugged herself, her body rocking, already knowing the answer.
It was the medical examiner. He fits the profile. The stressor?
The Whitfield case, Tatum said. Zoe.
The wrong time of death. Of course. We should have seen it straight away. We should have known. Did you get my message? I tried to communicate by blinking, but I couldn't get the letters right. Kept losing my count, but I tried to tell you.
We got the message. That's how we found him. He was with Deborah in high school. Listen, let's step away.
When did he switch between me and the body? How long have I been in there?
You should rest.
Tatum motioned the paramedic over.
Tell me. How long?
Tatum cleared his throat.
From what we could tell, the only time he had to switch the body was last night. He arranged it with the funeral home, told them he had some final urgent tests to do on the body. They brought the coffin to the morgue in the evening, picked it up at 5 in the morning.
Zoe looked back at the coffin, realizing that its walls were bare, the lining missing. He must have removed it so that anyone watching the video wouldn't see the lining and figure out where she was.
He would have waited for the last moment to make sure I was anesthetized for long enough, so I wouldn't wake up during the funeral, and to make sure I'd last longer. So probably 4:30. What time is it?
A paramedic approached her with a small medical bag. She took a step back.
What time is it?
The paramedic glanced at Tatum, who raised a hand to stop him.
It's just after 6:30.
Zoe blinked.
14 hours?
A constant clicking noise that distracted her.
14 hours.
It was her teeth, she realized. They were chattering.
I've been in there for 14 hours. He put me there. It was...
Strange how cold she was. It was always so hot in San Angelo. But she was trembling cold.
Miss, I'm going to give you something to calm you down, okay?
The paramedic asked warily. She took another step back, shaking like a leaf. Her palms were clammy and she couldn't stop her teeth from chattering. She glanced at Tatum, not knowing what she needed, only knowing she needed him to do something, to help her.
I'm right here,
he said. She glanced at the paramedic. He held a small needle.
Miss?
Her head jerked, giving him a quick, reluctant nod, and he took her hand. She had to force herself to freeze so she wouldn't hit him. The needle pierced her flesh, and she had a flicker of a memory, standing in the parking lot, her body rigid with pain, and a sudden sting in her neck. That was how he'd taken her.
Don't go,
she told Tatum.
I'm not going anywhere.
Chapter 90. Dale City, Virginia. Monday, September 19th, 2016. Zoe knew only the basics when it came to PTSD, but she was pretty sure that people who suffered from it shouldn't be taking care of each other. Despite that, it was what she and Andrea were doing, and it worked reasonably well, considering the circumstances. There were some problems. It felt like their traumas were dueling each other. Zoe wanted every window in the apartment open at all times. She needed light and air, and the busy street noise was music to her ears. Andrea wanted the windows closed, the doors locked. She'd turned the apartment into her own cocoon and wanted to make sure there was no way for any intruder to creep in. But they tried to compromise. The living room window would be open, but the window next to the emergency stairs would remain latched. The door would be kept locked at all times, of course. Zoe would go out for very long walks, feeling the wind on her face. They both had nightmares. They slept in the same room and in the same bed, though that arrangement had to change soon. Zoe had a long scratch on her face from last night, when Andrea had nearly clawed her eye out, trying to struggle against someone who wasn't there. Still, that morning almost felt normal, in a weekend vacation sort of way. Zoe woke up to the sound of frying, Andrea banging pans and pots in the kitchen. She got out of bed and padded to the kitchen, blinking. Andrea hummed to herself, sounding more cheerful than she had since Zoe had returned home. A tall pile of pancakes sat on a plate by her side, and she was making another one, flipping it, smiling with pleasure at how it turned out. Zoe reached out for the pancakes, and Andrea swatted her hand with the spatula.
Ow!
Not yet, Andrea said. I had this all planned out, with butter and maple syrup on top. I bought some orange juice to go with it. But I'm hungry, Zoe complained. Just one. She reached for the pancakes again. The spatula landed, missing her fingers by an inch.
Watch it,
Andrea waggled her eyebrows and waved the spatula menacingly.
Can I have a cup of coffee at least?
Zoe grumbled, eyeing the pancakes yearningly.
One cup.
Zoe prepared herself a cup, waiting patiently for the dark liquid of life to fill the mug. She sipped from it, breathing in the smell of coffee. Sublime. Then with one sharp movement, she stole the topmost pancake and stuffed it into her mouth, hurriedly, nearly choking herself.
You should see yourself, Andrea snorted. Your cheeks stuffed with pancake, you look like a hamster.
Zoe grinned at her, mouth full, and walked over to the living room swallowing.
Can I put on some music? She called.
That was another thing she needed almost constantly. Music.
Fine, but no Beyonce or Taylor. I can't take it anymore.
Katy Perry?
Okay,
Andrea groaned. Zoe put on Teenage Dream and stepped over to the living room window, which Andrea had closed, opening it again, staring at the cars driving back and forth. She didn't need to be an expert in trauma to know that one thing was emphatically different between Andrea and her. Zoe's attacker was in a federal prison, awaiting his trial.
Andrea's monster was on the loose. Despite the cops watching every exit of the building, despite the roadblocks, despite the citywide search, Rod Glover had disappeared like a malicious ghost.
I wish I potted like that last Friday night, Andrea said behind her.
What? Zoe asked, startled. The song. Oh. She hadn't even been listening to the music. It was just one more relaxing sound to accompany her.
Breakfast is served, madam. Can we turn off the noise?
Just a few more songs. Firework is about to play. Andrea sighed, shaking her head, stomping back into the kitchen. Zoe followed her, embarrassed, not willing to admit how much she needed the music. It would get better, she hoped. Each of them had a plate with a monstrous pile of pancakes, a block of butter on top, floating in a lake of maple. A third plate contained sliced fruit, bananas, strawberries, apples, and some blueberries and pecans. It was an Instagram-worthy type of breakfast, if either of them was the type to post meal images, which they weren't. Both Bentley sisters believed food was meant to be eaten, not posted online to tease. Zoe sliced into the pancakes, forking three maple soggy pieces. Then she topped the fork with a banana and put it in her mouth. She shut her eyes, breathing through her nose, letting the sweetness flood her body. Katie obliged with the chorus of firework. And there it was, a perfect moment, a peaceful second that she wished could last.
I heard you on the phone yesterday, Andrea said.
Talking with your boss about the leak?
It's nothing.
Don't worry about it. Someone told that reporter I was...
I'm the leak.
Zoe stared at her, dumbstruck.
He was writing a book about you.
And he called me.
He kept talking about how if he could get a close look at how you worked, you'd really shine.
And there were those assholes in your unit giving you crap for not being an agent and...
Andrea, do you have any idea how much trouble this could have caused?
Zoe wanted Harry Berry to be there right now, so that she could stab his eyes with her fork.
I don't do this job to be famous. I don't care about this dumb book, or what people say about me.
You should. People's opinions are important.
Don't ever do that again. You understand? I can't have you walking behind my back talking to reporters. Especially not now, when we're living together.
You don't have to worry about that.
Good.
She was still furious, but it was mostly aimed at Harry. She knew how conniving and convincing the bastard could be. It didn't surprise her that he managed to sway Andrea.
I'm going to visit Mom, Andrea said after they'd eaten in silence for a minute.
Zoe nearly choked for the second time that morning. Coughing, she took a swig of orange juice.
You're going to do what?
She's been hassling me nonstop these past few days, though. She's worried. She needs to see at least one of us face to face.
You can do a video chat.
Zoe, don't be ridiculous.
Fine. Go. She'll drive you insane in 3 seconds.
When are you flying?
Tomorrow.
I already bought a ticket.
And when are you flying back?
I can pick you up if it's not in the middle of the night.
I don't know.
Zoe took another bite, feeling suddenly tense. Andrea gazed down at her plate, not eating. Her expression was guilty.
This is not about visiting Mom, Zoe said.
It's also about Mom.
You're leaving.
I don't know what I'm doing yet. She raised her face. Her eyes were wet.
I need some time away. Away from the city, away from those memories, away from...
Me? Andrea drank from her glass, not answering.
I don't see why you want to leave.
Zoe felt like she was drowning.
It might be just for a few days, Zoe, just to clear my head. Don't make this into a big deal.
Clear your head. With Mom.
With myself. This isn't just about Glover. It's about me needing a change, okay? I followed you here without a plan, and it hasn't exactly been great for me.
Zoe put down her fork, biting her lip.
I love you, Zoe, Andrea said. But I need this. For me, okay?
Okay.
Are you mad at me?
No, Ray Ray. I'm not mad. She forked a small piece of pancake and put it into her mouth, chewing listlessly. Eat your pancakes. Chapter 91. When Tatum approached Marvin's room in intensive care, his heart clenched with worry.
The day before, when he'd visited, the old man had been sedated, his speech slurred, his skin pale, almost translucent. Tatum hadn't grasped the details, but there had been some sort of infection. For the first time in a long while, he'd realized how old his grandfather really was. He was steeling himself for another difficult visit when he heard a burst of womanly laughter from inside the room. A playful shriek followed it, and then a middle-aged nurse came walking out, shaking her head, a wide grin on her face. She paused when she saw Tatum.
"You're Marvin Gray's son, right?" she said. "You're his spitting image."
"I'm actually his grandson," Tatum said nonplussed.
She let out a giggle.
"Uh-huh, sure you are."
Tatum sighed.
"Is he better?"
"I'd say he is. Your father will outlive us all. I think by tomorrow he'll be able to come home."
"Are you sure you don't need him monitored for an additional day or two?"
"I doubt we'd be able to hold him here even if we wanted to."
She winked at him and strode away. Tatum entered the room, where Marvin lay in the bed holding a piece of paper, frowning at it. His nose was still swollen and red, though it did look a bit better than the day before.
"What's that you have there?"
Tatum asked, sitting on a chair by the bed.
"Tell me, Tatum, is that a 7 or a 1?
Marvin asked, showing him the paper.
"I think it's a 7. Is that the nurse's phone number?" "Mind your own business, Tatum."
Marvin put the paper on his night table and picked up his phone.
"Oh, that reminds me. If anyone asks, tell them you're my son. It's very important."
"I'll keep that in mind. Sounds like you'll be able to leave tomorrow."
"It's about damn time, Tatum. I can't do anything here. I can't drink, I can't smoke."
"You quit smoking 7 years ago.
"You think so, right? It's all been great until they told me I can't smoke. Now I feel like I need a cigarette all the time."
Marvin tapped on the phone screen.
"I've been reading about your guy."
"Which guy is that?"
"This Prescott guy."
Marvin turned the phone so Tatum could see the screen. It displayed the Chicago Daily Gazette's article. Of course. Tatum rolled his eyes. Harry Berry was milking this story dry.
"Don't believe everything you read."
"Guy sounds like a real treat. He was the medical examiner at the station. You worked with him."
"Yep. You never can tell.
You should have from the moment you met him. You don't look into people's eyes enough, Tatum. I already told you that. You can always see the truth in the eyes."
Tatum met his grandfather's gaze.
"What's my truth right now?"
"Looks like you're pissed off."
Marvin grinned at him. Tatum had to smile back. Marvin was in a good mood. He suspected the old man enjoyed his painkillers a bit too much.
"Andrea says hi."
Marvin's face morphed, concern seeping in.
"How's she doing?"
"I think she's fine, under the circumstances. She's a tough girl." "Not as tough as you'd like to believe,"
Marvin grumbled.
"Poor kid. When are you going to get that bastard, Tatum? Why don't you do your job?"
"I'm enjoying a bit of a vacation. A few days off, and I've got the apartment all to myself."
Tatum sighed again, remembering he probably only had 1 day left.
"Oh, is the fish okay?"
Marvin asked, his eyes widening.
"Damn, I'm sorry. I didn't feed him after I got stabbed, Tatum."
"The fish is fine, swimming in his bowl."
"Oh, good."
Marvin relaxed.
"And the cat. Freckles fine too, don't worry about it."
"Ah."
A brief look of disappointment.
"Well, can't win them all."
"He misses you."
Yeah, you're hilarious." "What about that internal investigation? Are you off the hook for making the world a better place?"
"Sounds like it. The witness is a friend of Wells's mother. Apparently he wasn't even there when it happened."
"Who's Wells?"
"The pedophile I shot."
"Then call him the pedophile, Tatum. I can't keep track of all the nut jobs you shoot."
"There were only..." "Never mind that."
Tatum paused for a moment.
"Would you mind talking about... that night?"
"Why would I mind?"
"The police got the basic gist of what happened from Andrea's testimony and the evidence in the scene. But I want to hear about it from your point of view."
"Yeah, well, I woke up from the noise of someone knocking on the door. It took me a bit of time to get up, and by that time, Andrea was at the door. She opened it."
"Did you hear him come in?"
"I don't know what I heard, Tatum. The door closed and there was some sound. Something that made me feel wrong. Maybe she called out or something. I don't know. I opened the door of the room just a bit. Saw this guy pushing Andrea to her bedroom. I stepped forward.
What were you going to do? Beat him up?
Tatum's voice was much sharper than he'd intended.
Look, Tatum. Do you want my version, or do you want to lecture me? I did a lot more than the damn cops did.
Fine. Then what?
He hit me. Wasn't too hard. Let me tell you, he acts big, but he hits like a girl, Tatum.
He broke your nose, stabbed you, and gave you a concussion.
Who's telling the story, Tatum, me or you? Were you there? If that's the way you conduct your interrogations, it's no wonder this fellow keeps getting away.
Fine, he hits like a girl.
Right. So I walk back to my room, get my gun, then follow him to the bedroom. I shot him once, hit him in the side. He turned to face me, so I fired a warning shot at the window.
You mean that you missed?
You're a pain in the ass, Tatum. Yes, I missed. It was dark. It was a small room. My nose hurt, and I didn't want to hit Andrea, okay?
Okay.
Then he got away.
Tatum leaned forward.
How? Through the door, Tatum. He ran past me through the door.
How did he seem?
Marvin thought about it for a moment.
You remember that time Freckle scratched my ankle, and I went after him with a frying pan, and broke my TV set?
Yes, Marvin. I have a vague recollection of that wonderful day.
I cornered him in the bathroom, and the expression on his face. That was how that guy looked.
Like a trapped animal,
Tatum said.
Yes.
Marvin seemed satisfied.
Maybe I should have gone after him with a frying pan instead of a gun.
Chapter 92. Dale City, Virginia. Tuesday, September 20th, 2016. Zoe had managed to wear the face of a supportive, loving sister until Andrea got into the Uber that took her to the airport. Then she let herself fall apart for a while. Fear lurked, waiting for her. Its presence, almost like an actual shadow stalking in the corner of a hallway or an unlit room or beyond a closed door. She opened all the windows in the apartment, went for a very long walk, switched on the music in the apartment, turning up the volume to fill the empty rooms with noise. For a while, she tried to force herself to work. She read the transcripts of the interviews with Clyde Prescott, frustrated that she hadn't talked to him herself. Why hadn't she? She'd done it with Jeffrey Alston. She'd interviewed several serial killers before. But she hadn't been able to bring herself to face Prescott. She read through his partial autobiography. Though Tatum had pulled an act, deleting it from the laptop, he'd made sure to save a copy beforehand. The same couldn't be said for the printed draft with the notes, which he had actually shredded. She wished she had those notes with Prescott's handwritten comments. It almost worked. She managed to spend long stretches of time, 15 and 20 minutes consumed by work, writing notes, tightening the profile, knowing it might be invaluable to another profiler someday. But then she'd realize she was staring into space, her body tense, breath held, the silence around her oppressive and consuming. The sudden knock on her door nearly gave her a heart attack. She was about to run to the kitchen and grab her largest knife when Tatum spoke through the door.
Zoe, are you there? It's me.
She unlocked the door, letting him in, half hating herself for how relieved she felt.
You're reading that thing?
He asked, noticing the pages on the table. It's fascinating, she said. Prescott could be quite articulate, and I'm learning a lot about him just by reading it.
The less I know about that monster, the better.
He's not... Zoe shook her head and swallowed the rest of the sentence. I wish you hadn't shredded his notes. I would have loved to have seen them. To her surprise, her tone was angry, accusing.
I was too busy saving your life to worry about that.
You could have shredded blank pages. You didn't need to use the actual thing. You could have made a copy before. You could have...
What are you talking about?
Tatum blinked, clearly bewildered.
I was worried sick. Do you have any idea what I was going through?
No, she screamed. She didn't know why, her mind short-circuiting.
But it wasn't as bad as what I was going through.
She was frustrated by her own tears and irrational behavior. She didn't want him to see her like that. Tatum took her hand and pulled her very softly toward him. She let herself be pulled, and then her cheek touched his chest. He hugged her, but did it so gently, the touch feather light, as if he knew that she couldn't stand being constrained by anything. She shut her eyes and listened to the beats of his heart,
After a while, she let out a shuddering breath and pulled away.
Sorry.
You have nothing to be sorry about.
Do you want something to drink? It was 3 p.m. She expected him to refuse.
That would be perfect, he said.
She opened the cupboard and took out a bottle of Talisker Sky and 2 lowball glasses. She poured a bit of the amber liquid for Tatum and a much larger portion for herself.
Is that my ration?
Tatum asked, holding the glass to the light. It's the middle of the afternoon, Zoe pointed out.
Your glass has 4 times as much.
I'm traumatized. I'm allowed.
Well, I've been visiting Marvin in the hospital. I'm traumatized, too.
Zoe added some more whiskey to Tatum's glass. He took it from her and clinked it with her own glass.
To trauma,
he said. She snorted.
To trauma.
They sipped from their glasses. She let the smoky taste linger on her tongue, then swallowed, feeling the warmness spreading in her chest. They drank in a comfortable silence, and Zoe found her thoughts just wandering around pleasantly, going nowhere in particular. It was refreshing. But finally she sighed. So, Mancuso told me that you are on the Glover case. He looked surprised.
She did? She told me not to tell you.
Zoe didn't answer, her lip twitching upward. After a second, Tatum let out a soft curse.
You were bluffing. She never told you anything.
She didn't. Zoe sipped from her glass, pleased with herself.
But you just did.
I had a feeling you'd ask to be involved.
Okay, yes, I did.
Any idea how he got away?
The police think that he may have gone up on the roof. From there, he could have scaled down a drainpipe into an alley that wasn't watched by the cops and fled.
He sounds like a ninja. And then he presumably used some sort of getaway vehicle to escape, managing to avoid the citywide manhunt after him.
That's the general idea.
While bleeding heavily, she finished her glass.
They think Marvin may have been confused about how hard he was hit.
What do you think? Tatum's gaze met hers.
It doesn't feel right.
Let's go see, she said. They walked to her bedroom. Tatum had never been in her bedroom before, obviously. She kicked herself for letting him in without tidying a bit first. Clothes were scattered everywhere, including some underwear. There were 3 half-empty mugs of coffee on the desk and papers on the bed and the floor.
Ignava.
She waved her hand vaguely at the room. Everything.
Right,
he smirked. According to blood spatter and Andrea's testimony, Glover was here when Marvin shot him. She stood by the bed.
So Marvin is by the door.
Tatum surveyed it.
He has a concussion and a broken nose. He's probably leaning against the doorway or the wall.
One shot hits Glover in the side.
Glover isn't used to extreme pain,
Tatum said.
As far as we know, he wasn't abused as a kid. He didn't get into fights, not ones he couldn't win easily. He preyed on the weak.
I cut him with a knife in Chicago, Zoe said, recalling that day. It was a shallow cut, but it scared the shit out of him.
So he's in pain.
A second shot blasts the window. Marvin misses, but maybe Glover thinks otherwise. He sees an immediate threat. Marvin, aiming a gun at him. And he knows the shooting probably alerted the cops. Zoe bites her lip. He wants to run.
The window is broken. Sharp shards of glass everywhere, and he doesn't want to turn his back to Marvin.
Tatum's eyes seemed distant, as if he were seeing it happening. Zoe knew that expression. Andrea sometimes told her that was how she looked. So he bolts for the door.
Right.
Tatum turned to the door, preparing to leave. Tatum! Zoe blurted. She didn't know why she'd stopped him.
What?
He looked at her confused. Nothing. Let's go to the front door. She followed him out of the bedroom. They opened the front door, regarding the hallway. There was a door to the staircase, an elevator, and some doors to other apartments. Which way did he go?
He was scared,
Tatum said.
And hurt.
And he knew the cops were outside, Zoe added. We know that because he was dressed as a cop.
How did he get into the building dressed as a cop?
Tatum asked. How did he get into the building at all?
It was late. The cops would have been alert to anyone leaving or entering.
Zoe was used to thinking alone. Even when she'd worked with Tatum before, she'd used him as someone she could test her own theories with. But now it was as if something had clicked, and they were in sync. Their minds worked together like gears in a clockwork mechanism. She saw the man who'd sat in front of Clyde Prescott and methodically cracked the killer like a walnut.
We know he was in Dale City weeks ago,
Tatum said.
Coming out of the woodwork once I was away?
Andrea told the cops that he appeared to know the layout of the apartment,
Tatum said.
They thought he may have broken inside before to take a look.
Maybe he didn't need to. Zoe was nauseated. The apartments here have the same layout.
He'd been waiting.
Tatum glanced around him.
That was his M.O., right? He waited for his prey. He'd choose a good spot and just wait.
Zoe nodded.
He'd choose the perfect spot. Wait for a girl to walk by. Alone.
Chapter 93. It took Zoe and Tatum 7 minutes to convince the superintendent of Zoe's apartment building. He was an old, gruff man, whose initial stance was that unless they had a warrant, he had nothing to say to them. But they talked in that same sink Zoe found so exhilarating and confusing. She played the victim, the resident whose apartment had been broken into, while Tatum took the role of the imposing federal agent. After 7 minutes, the super would have given them his firstborn child if they'd been so inclined. But they weren't. All they wanted were names and descriptions of the new residents. The super wasn't very good at describing people, but it didn't matter, because only one of the new residents was a middle-aged man who lived alone, going by the name of Daniel Moore. He wouldn't give them the key, but insisted he come with them for some reason Zoe couldn't fathom. Perhaps it was some sort of ancient superintendent code of honor she didn't know or care about. But he unlocked the door for them. The flies and smell in the apartment easily clarified no one had been there for a few days at least. A bunch of half-eaten takeout boxes were tossed in the kitchen sink, all from the same Thai food place around the corner. They stank up the entire apartment, and the superintendent muttered about insects and cleaning bills and lawsuits. Zoe ignored him. She strode to the bedroom, Tatum in her wake. Dry blood was spattered on the floor and the bedsheets. It was where Glover had fled to. Like any hurt animal, he'd bolted to his lair to lick his wounds. He'd left in a hurry. Papers were scattered in the room, some clothes. Zoe frowned, trying to figure this out. He was already safe here, and then he'd bolted out. Why?
Something spooked him, Tatum said behind her.
There was a door-to-door investigation after he assaulted Andrea, Zoe said. Cops talking to residents, asking if they'd heard anything.
They knocked on the door to the apartment.
Probably called out police.
She imagined him here, curling in the corner, trying not to make a sound. It gave her a jolt of satisfaction, knowing he was hurt and scared.
He waited for them to go, then took what he needed and ran.
Tatum inspected a paper on the night table.
Phone bill for Daniel Moore. He faked the entire identity.
Identity theft, probably, Zoe said. The police have been searching for him for years. He managed to keep out of their reach.
Look at this.
Tatum handed her something else.
A hospital bill.
For a moment, Zoe thought Glover had been brazen enough to go to the hospital with his gunshot wound. But no, this was dated 3 weeks before. It was a bill for an MRI. She found the results on the floor crumpled into a ball. She read them repeatedly several times, her eyes widening.
What is it?
Tatum asked.
Suspicion for a malignant brain tumor, she said. I think he might be dying.
The final puzzle piece clicked. That was why he hadn't waited for them to lower their guard. He didn't have time.
Couldn't happen to a better person,
Tatum said with grim satisfaction. Zoe didn't answer. An inkling of dread settled in her gut. A wounded animal went to its lair to lick its wounds. A dying animal had nothing left to lose, and that made it unpredictable. And dangerous. Chapter 94. They sat in a bar in Woodbridge, because Zoe didn't want to go back to her apartment. Tatum had been drinking the same pint of Blue Moon since they'd sat down. Zoe was already on her second pint of Guinness, and the glass was half finished. She was, for the first time in a long while, drunk. Usually the slightest loss of control made her edgy. But right now, she enjoyed the way alcohol blurred away the sharp edges of reality.
You know what's good, she said.
What?
Tatum asked.
Beer.
He raised an eyebrow.
You probably drank enough from that good beer.
You're not my mother,
she drawled. Thank God for that.
My mother is unbearable. I don't understand why Andrea went to stay with her. Tatum sighed. She's probably not that bad.
Zoe didn't argue the point.
Tatum, you know that night?
What night?
The night when I said, maybe you shot that guy because you thought he deserved it.
Yeah.
He took a long drink from his glass. Zoe was pretty sure she was supposed to apologize, though she suddenly wasn't sure what had triggered the argument in the first place. She still thought she might have been right, though that probably wasn't the best thing to say at the moment.
I was dumb, she finally offered.
It wasn't something she said often, or in fact, ever, but it seemed like a safe bet.
Well, thanks for saying that.
He smiled at her gratefully. She had no idea how she'd managed to navigate through that thorny issue. It was like she'd been running with a blindfold in a minefield, missing the mines by pure chance. I also wanted to thank you for saving Andrea.
I didn't save Andrea,
he said, surprised.
Yes, you did. You told your grandfather to look out for her, and he shot Glover and saved Andrea. So I owe you Andrea's life.
Or she owes you her life. Or maybe we split it. Split the tab. She let out a small, hiccuping laugh.
Each of us owes a bit of Andrea's life.
Okay, you definitely had enough to drink. Let's get you home.
He got off the bar stool.
Wait!
She grabbed his wrist.
Not yet.
He sighed, sat back down.
You'll have a hell of a hangover tomorrow.
I don't get hangovers.
You're in for a surprise.
I think I don't dehydrate easily.
The song in the background changed to Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Wanna Have Fun.
Oh, I love this song, Zoe said.
You would.
What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing.
Tatum smirked at her. They sat in silence for a bit, listening to the song.
I need to find Rod Glover, Zoe said, the words sobering her up slightly. I know it makes me sound obsessive, but...
You're right.
What?
You're right. You need to find him. And I'll help.
Okay, then.
She had a strange, fuzzy feeling that had nothing to do with the alcohol in her bloodstream.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Tatum pried the glass, still almost half full, out of her hand.
Partner.
She tried to be serious. They were talking about an important matter. But that warm feeling settled in her stomach. And girls just wanted to have fun in the background. A smile crept to her face and wouldn't go away. For the first time in days, she felt almost safe.
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of In the Darkness by Mike Omer, performed by Brittany Presley. Performance copyright 2019 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc., all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.